God damn it, we must have had a power outage today. My computer restarted. It'll
Oh,
be forever.
please. He's always
Go
got a
without me.
problem.
Just sign
Put
in
the crank in the
and
side, ring it
shut
up, and you'll be ready to
your
go.
pie hole.
He's like Radar O'Reilly trying to get his computer up again. Oh, Christ on a crutch.
Back to the bin.
So, hello everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here with my Is It Yours co-host, Mr. Sean Whalen.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
And one of my regular Back to the Bins co-hosts, Mr. David Pascarella.
Just crossing the streams tonight.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, pulling back the curtain, we were supposed to record an Is It Yours tonight, but that didn't work out. So I threw out the last-minute question of if people wanted to do a Bins episode, and kind of Sean was there already. You know, what am I going to do, tell him no? But we're waiting on Scott Gardner to sign in, and he's having some computer issues, so we're going to talk a little bit before he gets here. We were planning just to have a general shoot-the-shit episode, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Sean, it has been years since you've been on Back to the Bins. What you been up to?
It doesn't seem that long, but I started co-hosting Is It Jaws with you.
Oh, yeah.
I've become the voice in your head.
You're one, like, I don't know if you're the angel or the devil that shows up on one shoulder.
It's a movie.
Tell them you hate the movie. Tell them you hate it. And then after I say I hate it, you're like, oh, I loved it.
How could you hate that movie, you psycho?
So I guess, you know, we'll see if Scott is able to get on. He's saying his computer is screwed up and he doesn't know if he's going to be able to get back on. But the original topic that came up today was, what are you reading and why? The why is real easy for me. I can tell you what most of what I'm reading nowadays is stuff for this show. And, you know, the why is really because a lot of what we're doing on the show right now is focused on series that I want to be reading. You know, we're doing the Thing Hulk retrospective issue by issue, so we've been going through those. Dave and I started doing the Commandy retrospective. Gene and I started to do the Camelot 3000 retrospective. Bill and I do the Avengers Spotlight. And, you know, all of these things are series that I want to read and I'm looking forward to reading. And I have found of late I don't have as much time to read comics. And a lot of the time is spent just catching up on these things. I spend more time buying comics than I do reading them right now, which is probably not a real wise economic thought. But that's kind of what I've been reading lately. And we can pick that up and move on with that in a little while. But what have you guys been reading lately?
I've been working on my 40s read-through, but I've had to pare it down because, to be honest, I can only read so many of those one after the other. But I'm reading Detective, Batman, World's Finest, Action, and Superman. And then I intermix it with I'm reading some independents, believe it or not, Ex Machina, Why the Last Man, DMZ, and the current stuff is, you know, the modern Superman, Jay Garrick, and G.I. Joe. Oh, and the new Justice Society title, which I've been enjoying.
I don't disagree with your thought at all about it being a little bit more difficult to just stick with the older stuff, because I found if I do too many older ones in a row, and by older ones I mean, you know, Golden Age ones, the storytelling tropes of the day start to wear me out after a while. But if I can get a palate cleanser like you're doing with, you know, these other series, then I could just keep going back to it. You know, I probably have to do like a 1-to-1 ratio. For every 1940s book I read, I have to read something, you know, from 1985 to now.
Well, you know, I would like to, before I die, be able to say, you know, oh, I've read all the Superman comics. And I figured unless I cut back, I'm just not going to live long enough to make it through.
Talk to John Wilson, because I think he's done the full Superman read through, or at least he's close to it.
I know, but he started, you know, 20 years ago. I don't have that kind of time left.
It's kind of sad when you think of it that way, isn't it?
I start figuring, well, even if I retire and I read, you know, nonstop, I'm still may not make it through everything.
Now, for people who don't know otherwise, Sean has been a regular host of Raging Bullets for pretty much forever, and was one of the first podcasts that I discovered when I found out what a podcast was, and I would say I pretty much reached out to Sean by email not too long after I discovered his show, just to say, hey, I'm listening to this and I enjoy it, and so, you know, we've maintained a relationship now probably for a good 15 years, I'm thinking. But, you know, that was purely a DC podcast until recently when it just became a comic book appreciation podcast. Hasn't lost the DC feel, but it's added a couple of other things. I just recently listened to the 3-part episode about the Dark Phoenix saga, which was excellent, and I recommend it to anybody listening. But what are you reading lately, Sean?
I've been kind of jumping around, and to your point, yeah, a lot of X-Men because we did Dark Phoenix Saga. I just did, for the show, we're actually doing a 2-part thing on Thor, Walt Simonson's run. I had read, like, the origin of Beta Ray Bill. Like, I know who the character is from a lot of crossovers and things like that, but never actually read that piece. So I've been reading that. Actually, when you mentioned this episode, though, and it's like, what are you reading now? I kind of used it as a way for me to hit some things that I've been wanting to read that I just haven't gotten to. I read the first issue of James Bond 007 by Garth Ennis. That's out right now, called Your Cold, Cold Heart. It's really good. If you're a fan of, like, the original, like, Ian Fleming novels, you know, where he's, you know, Bond's kind of a jerk sometimes, you know, that, you know, the edgy part, or kind of Daniel Craig's early movies, you know, when he was doing that, and some of the early Connery stuff. It's more that, and I'm a big fan of all the Bond, you know, stuff, but this, I like when you get to this. The artwork is very film noir style, you know, it's got kind of that more of that detective edge to it, you know, some of the stuff that we saw during, like, Brubaker's Batman run, and, you know, that kind of stuff that was going on. It's really, really good. The simple premise, without going too crazy into it and ruining anything for anybody, the story behind it is, it starts off as, like, this squad is talking about getting revenge on Bond, you know, the typical Bond opening, and Bond kind of coldly handles the situation. it's like pretty intense. You're expecting the whole premise is going to be like this group going after him. No, it's a Bond opening, and that ends pretty quickly. But this one is one of those where it kind of goes back to the classic days of Bond, where there is this scientific advancement, which is this smart bomb that it's water-based. And if it bursts, this water thing bursts into the room, like, it encases anyone in the room in this water compound that's almost like steel. It's unbreakable. They die, you know, because there's no way to breathe or anything like that. It's a murder weapon. But the cool part about it is, at least if you're trying to assassinate a bunch of people, is that it's very easy for the thing to dissipate after a certain amount of time. So, like, you can commit the murder and nobody knows. But it's this top secret formula that has been in works since the Soviet days. Like, we stole it from them, or, you know, Bond's crew stole it from them. Now it's been stolen from Bond's crew, and the whole thing, and when I say stolen, I mean, like, all the research, everything. There's nothing to, like, give you any kind of starting point as far as where to get this. So it's, like, you know, kind of a race against time to get this magical, you know, scientific advancement. And understanding the fact that the superpower that has this has now got this assassination weapon that can be used on a small or large scale. So it's kind of a cool sense of danger. But like any great Bond story, it's not just James Bond. It's Bond's whole supporting cast and everything that you like about a good Bond film. It reads like that. I'm only one issue in so far, and I'm captivated. I'm definitely going to keep going on it. But it was kind of a fun little read. And then besides that, I've been reading Ultimate Spider-Man, the new relaunch by Jonathan Hickman, which are you guys familiar with the premise of that at all?
I mean, the original Ultimate Spider-Man, yes, but not the reboot.
So the ideas behind this is if some super being stopped all the heroes from being heroes, like their catalyst points, what would happen if years later they were faced with the opportunity? At least the Spider-Man, it works that way. So Spider-Man's, this is Peter Parker, who's more of a young adult. You know, he's got kids, he's got a wife. It's got the cast that you would expect, you know, as far as his supporting cast and all of that. But he's faced with this reality of he could have been Spider-Man. And what choice do you make in that moment when you're now, this life is still there. It's not going to go away, but you have the ability to become Spider-Man. Do you take that? And how does that fit into a life that has been established in a very different way than we're used to seeing it? For not just him, for his entire supporting cast, including those that would be quote-unquote villains, because the games play differently now. It's very fresh, very, very different. I'm 5 issues in on this thing, and I can't put it down.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
it sounds to me like a really interesting premise, but I don't know how much legs it would have. Because, you know, you have to have an understanding or a feeling for what would I do in this situation? You know, you're presented with this, you have your life kind of set, you're married, you have your children, but what if you could be a hero? But then you're going to have to consider, what am I giving up to be a hero? And, you know, what danger am I going to put my loved ones in? And, you know, all of those different factors that are going to come into play. But I don't know how long that goes before ultimately you have to realize either I'm too selfish to do this, or with great power comes great responsibility and I'm going to do it.
Adding another layer to what you're saying, though, and there's a point to everything that you're saying. This is the ultimate universe. So the ultimate universe that you read before, this was done to it. So there's that layer underneath it where there's people that are they're discovering that this is something that was done to them, and the other life that they're having the option to dip their toe in is the life that they should have led if somebody didn't screw with it. So is it
like Uncle Ben is still alive or no?
I don't know how much of that you want me to tell you, but yes. So it's a lot like exactly what you're thinking. There are things that happened to the traditional Spider-Man that things have played out very differently.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, what was all of a sudden, you know, my dementia kind of kicks in. What was the series or the group of series that came out of the No More Mutants thing that basically had everybody's fantasy life coming true?
You're talking about Heroes?
Not Heroes Reborn, no. If you remember, you know, there was the whole No More Mutants thing, and then they had a bunch of mini series, and I think they had like one that it was focused on that basically kind of went into everybody's lives, you know, how they would have been different if this had occurred. And, you know, like, I remember there was a series with, you know, Peter Parker, and his life was much, much better. It's like his dreams had come true. I'm trying to remember. I should remember what it's called. And I'm looking in my notes here to see if I can find it. But you know which one I'm talking about now, right? The House of M.
Yes.
Yeah, I finally found it. The House of M. And then, you know, they had everybody kind of living their fantasy life until they realized, you know, that it had been changed. And then, you know, I guess the big moral dilemma is, do you accept this fantasy world that you're living in where everything's what you want it to be, but you have the knowledge that it's not real? It's kind of like the cage in Star Trek.
It's not that, though. See, that's the premise here is this is a Peter Parker who is living a life, but it's not a fantasy life. He's living a real life that took an alternate path. There's a huge distinction there. And some of it's the stuff that David's talking about. Like, David started asking questions, and they're good questions. But it doesn't mean that Peter's life is perfect or that it's everything that he ever wanted it to be. There's elements of him that feels that there's something missing. Like we all do. I mean, here's the thing. We've all got, you know, there's certain days where we have ups and downs and things like that in how we live. So there's more to it than that of what's going on.
So it's almost as if, since I didn't read this, if Krypton never exploded and Superman has this whole life on Krypton, his family, a wife maybe, and meanwhile, Lex Luthor turns out to be the humanitarian of the year because he never became evil because there was no Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, would that be for the man who has everything?
On an expanded level, because you'd be tapping into what happened to Lex Luthor. He's not a bad guy. Is that sort of where they're going in this series?
Well, in the case of what you're talking about, though, it's a lot more like Clark would be living a life on Krypton where he's a scientist now or something.
Right.
Following in the footsteps of his father. He's living a complete life. Maybe he's married. Maybe he's not. You know, whatever. He's living a completely different life. Never became Superman because he's on Krypton. They're not flying around on Krypton. You know, so because, you know, they were living there. So he never got to live the life where he met the Kents and got to in the farm. Now, he's in this choice that Peter's making. Want to be really clear. It's becoming Spider-Man in his current world, not in it doesn't like a shift back to like the world that we're used to. Right. So they're gaining powers for the, you know, the various heroes are being given the opportunity to gain powers and perhaps head down a path in this world that they could have been presented before. So actually, it's a strange combination of what both of you are asking about, because in Paul's case, there's some truth to it there. He's got kids. He's got a wife. It has an impact, you know, and what do you tell who and what does that look like? And, you know, all of those pieces that go along with it. And this isn't a world that has superheroes prevalent. So, you know, you're now trying to navigate in this particular world with those pieces. Like I said, 5 issues in so far, I'm glued. It's been an interesting read. So, Paul, I know your point is, you know, how much legs does it have? So far, 5 issues in, like, I think they're just hitting the tip of the iceberg as far as where they can go with this thing. But we'll see. We'll see.
Is there some sort of cosmic entity that's causing this?
Yes. There was an event that caused this, that created this, caused the change in the Ultimate Universe.
Does sound interesting. And, you know, my take on comics for quite some time now has been, I really prefer the older comics to the newer ones. And generally, when it comes to the new ones, I just kind of steer clear of them for the most part, unless I get somebody who's telling me, hey, you might want to check this one out for that reason. And this sounds like it might be worth checking out. So I may look into this.
I used to feel the same way as you, but I got to be honest with you. Superman was for a long time. The Superman title is firing on all cylinders now. I'm enjoying the hell out of it. G.I. Joe, I'm enjoying. and even this new Justice Society title. I'm enjoying that too, and the Jay Garrick book. I'm enjoying it, I have to say. It's got enough of the old school with some new twists.
Boy, I'm not in every title that you're talking about, because that's exactly what it is. It's got enough of the classic feel. I think sometimes where those books have gotten watered down along the ways has been where they've lost what's made them cool, like what always made them cool. Yeah. I think it's proof you can modernize them just fine as long as you understand the characters at the core. If you've lost that piece, then you've kind of lost me on the book. But every book you were talking about, the new G.I. Joe is particularly surprising me. Because it's been a while since I've touched G.I. Joe. And man, are they making that one. I mean, I don't know. I feel like a kid again reading that one. I'm like, that's a page. All of them are a page turner. And they keep expanding the line. They're doing like a Destro book and stuff like that coming up. I'm like, I'm all in. Bring on more G.I. Joe right now. If you told me a year ago I'd be saying that, I would have laughed at you.
You know, the funny thing is I typically would have a pile of my books sitting that would come, put it in the pile. I got to get to reading this. Now it's like, I can't wait for the next issue.
Yeah.
It's nice when you can get into that mode. See, my problem with the more modern books, and it's not all of them. I don't want to paint with a broad brush and say, you know, every book sucks, because they don't. But my problem with the more modern books is twofold. One is when you get a writer or an artist, you know, whatever creative team, and they come onto the book fully expecting to do a very short run. You know, it's I'm going to do 12 issues. It's going to be two trade paperbacks, and then I'm gone. And they don't really pay homage to what's gone before it, and they don't care what's coming in the future, and that bothers me. The other thing that bothers me is when the creative team seems to be embarrassed by its history. You know, it's funny because, you know, Sean, you said, you know, it's such a cool industry or such cool concepts, and they are. But then when the writers almost feel embarrassed of the source material, I mean, it's something we saw in movies a lot when they'd make a movie about, you know, a superhero and they had to, you know, be embarrassed about what it was. And it wasn't really until they embraced what made them great and everything that, you know, that they had been hiding from, that the movies really seemed to hit their stride. So those are the things that bother me. And it took me a long time as a completist, as I was collecting, you know, all these different series and I had a solid run, to say, I don't need to continue having a solid run anymore, which is a little weird because when I pared down my collection somewhat, what I did was I put that basically, random number where I said, I'm only collecting this series up to this issue, and that's all I care about getting. But I was still trying to get a complete run up to that number, so it kind of makes the argument a little off. But, you know, it's made my collecting more fun to have that arbitrary number that I say, okay, I'm collecting Amazing Spider-Man, but I'm only going up to issue 300. Anything after 300, I'm not worried about. And, you know, I think at this point they're obviously mostly the very, very prime issues, but I need, I think, 26 issues to that I would have that whole run. So, you know, that's pretty good. Daredevil, I said I was going to do up to issue 200, and there's only 3 issues that I don't have. So it has made, you know, focusing the collecting a little bit more fun for me.
That's the nice thing about comics, though, for anybody listening to this. I mean, here's the thing, the three of us, as we talk more about this, I'm sure the three of us have a very unique way of approaching our collections. And if anybody who's listening to this right now is in that same boat, I think that's the coolest thing about comics that remains to this day, right? Is it is what you make it. It is your collection in such a unique way. There's not a right way or a wrong way to go about it. The important part is to be enjoying it. If you're not on some level enjoying this, if you're just doing it, you know, as this kind of like I'm in this hamster wheel of it. And I think at various times in our life, you all three of us have been longtime collectors, right? I think we've all gone through those various points in time where it was a little bit hamster wheel. And sometimes you need that thing to reinvigorate you. It's sometimes a new series, sometimes a new book. It's sometimes stepping away for just a little bit and then coming back to it and remembering why you loved it from the beginning. But it's when you tap into it, and I feel like right now, I don't know, everything I'm reading right now, old and new. I'm not just reading new stuff. I'm reading lots of classic stuff and digging it. I'm just at this real cool time right now where I just feel like even 2 years ago, I wasn't in the place where I am right now. I was still reading, but I wasn't having this level of enjoyment. I'm just digging it right now. I'm like a sponge right now.
For me, I went through that whole new 52. I couldn't stand the Superman books. I hated that. But I, being a completist, I bought every single... I couldn't accept that it was going to last.
And obviously it didn't, because now you're loving it again.
And it didn't. Oh, it was terrible. I hated it.
But then the question becomes...
Some people loved it. I hated it.
The question then becomes, are you the completist? There was, in between the run that you loved... and the run that you currently love, there was, whatever, 30, 40 issues that you kind of were cold on. Do you need those 30 or 40 issues in your collection?
I did. You know, I probably could have gotten away with it because they had reset.
Not for you meddling kids. Oh, sorry. What?
Not for you meddling. By resetting the numbers, you gave me an out. I could have went, screw this. I had this concern they were going to pick the numbers up again, and I wanted to be able to say, oh, I got the complete run from 1965 through till today.
And
they'll all wind up in a dumpster at some point.
when I'm gone and my kids can't be bothered trying to get top dollar for them, they're all over for 50 cents each at the comic store. But, then there's the aspect of collecting for me, which is the hunt for the right price on a book. And I had an example, and I put it on the Back to the Bins page, Facebook page this week. First issue special, which is, 13 issues long? Yeah, 13 issues long. And I probably only had the first issue for quite some time. And then I picked up some issues in the dollar bin, and I had most of them, and I got Warlord on, the first issue of Warlord on eBay for a good price. And I got down to the point where I had 12 out of the 13 issues, and I had not spent significant money on any of them. And I wanted to complete that series. And the one issue I was missing was issue number 4, which is Lady Cop. And I kept saying to myself, how popular can this be? Seriously. What's it worth? And I looked it up on eBay, and it's, $10 and $15 and plus shipping. And I'm like, I'm not spending that. This should be a $1 or a $2 book. And Gary Arkell, who's a listener, and he follows the page, and he's a, good guy. And he said, look, I have it, and I'll give it to you. I don't even remember what he said he would give it to me for, but he says, I'll give it to you for this, which was a decent price. But, you got to pay the postage, which I don't, he's not running a charity. I don't expect him to do that. But when you added a decent price to the postage, I said, that's more than I want to pay for the book. Thank you for offering, but, I'm not, I feel like I don't need to do that. And it's brought further by the times when my wife has stopped with me in the comic stores, because I'll pull out an issue and I'm looking at it, and she knows it's on my want list, and she says, why don't you buy that book? I said, because it's $5. She says, you got $5 on you? I said, yeah, but this book should be $1. I'm not spending $5 on a book that should be $1. And I think that she doesn't get that, because in her mind, it's one book. It's, okay, you wasted $4, but who cares? But then I say, well, there's 1,000 books I want, and if I waste $4 in every one of them, that's $4,000 I just wasted. So... for me, you
sounds
have
like
to find it.
You should be working for OMB, for the government.
But you got to find it at the right price. So this week I went to the Route 110 comic show that you went with me that one time, Dave. And I was sifting through the $1 bins and somebody's table, and there it was for a buck. And I said, okay, now I got it. And the pleasure I got out of getting that book for $1, which is the price I should have paid for it, far exceeds the value in my mind of Lady Cop. But it completed the series, I got it for the price I should have gotten it, and I'm a happy dude. If I had broken down and spent more money for it, and then I was going through the $1 bin this week and I saw it, I would have been very annoyed at myself. So
thank you to every comic vendor that attends shows like that. because that you're right. There is nothing like that joy of finding a book at a bargain and sifting through. And it's one of those, the sifting through piece is kind of, it's kind of this, it's almost therapeutic.
And there's books like that.
Strangely,
that I,
the stuff come apart.
There's books like that that I need to complete a run or whatever that I look at and I say, they shouldn't be that expensive. And I can't, you know, and it's not even a matter of that I see them and they're a lot of money. Usually I don't see them. And I was talking to one of the guys in one of the stores, and he says, you know, a lot of the stuff we buy, you know, we buy collections and collections, and we don't really have the time to go through everything all the time, and we don't have the space to display everything. So there's books that would go into the $1 bins that are, you know, in the basement or in a storage facility a lot of times. So that lady cop issue you're looking for, he was like, you know, I might have that, but I wouldn't even know it yet because it might be in a storage bin. I don't have it in the store right now, I can tell you that. But there's a lot of books like that that, you know, while they're on your want list, they're a little obscure. They're not something where the people selling them are going to think there's a great market for them. And, you know, it's going to be harder to find them. I do find, and price-wise it's a very different thing, but I find that a lot of the case, that in a lot of the cases for a lot of the old Superman issues that you're looking for, Dave, that, you know, you just don't see them in the stores. And I assume there's not that many.
And on eBay, they want an arm and a leg for them.
eBay.
They're not particularly fantastic issues, but it's like, oh, yeah, it's from 1963. I want $50 for that because it's old.
Yeah, that's what I want for it.
Please.
But, you know, with buying from eBay, I've found that my best method is if I find somebody who's got buy it now prices that are reasonable, and then I buy enough issues from them that it kind of takes care of the postage and handling fees, because now you're spreading it out over the number of books that you're getting, and the actual postage that you're paying per book isn't that much. So, you know, I need to do it that way when I buy them from eBay. Usually I'm not buying one book from a seller unless it's something I really have a specific desire to have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you gave me an image of the guy with the basement full of stuff like Raiders of the Lost Ark, except comic books all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Those are the best places. There are certain books that I need to find, like, at garage sales or stuff, because no dealer is going to sell them at a price where I'm willing to get them. When I was at the show this week, I saw, like, somebody had Conan number one, which is on my desired list. I said, yeah, you're probably asking more for that than I'm willing to pay, but, you know, what are you asking? Oh, that's $300. I've never spent $300 for a comic book in my life. I don't think I ever will. So, you know, I got to find it at a significant bargain price compared to that. So, you know, that's one of the challenges is, you know, a book may, you know, that book, that may have been a very fair price for the book, but it's just beyond what I can justify paying.
It's almost like you have to luck out where someone is selling what they don't really know they're selling. And yeah. I scored that when I got my G.I. Joe 155. It was clearly somebody either was an estate or something. Just, oh, let's get rid of it. It's a comic book.
But then you have the moral dilemma that people present of, you know, you go to a garage sale and it's some, you know, woman selling her husband's, who passed away, his comic collection, and she's got Action Comics number one there, and she's asking you for $100 for it. Do you tell her that she's being crazy and that she's, you know, losing a lot of money in the deal, or do you give her $100 and walk away snickering to yourself that you just got the bargain of the century? Yeah, I'm not sure which way. I don't know. The temptation might get a hold of me if something like that happens.
And then it turns out it's one of those treasuries from the 70s.
And then you got what you deserve.
The best places I've ever gotten comics where I've gotten stuff like scores like that has been flea markets and garage sales, where they're just looking to clear out space, and they're selling a box, not like individual issues. Mm. They're selling just a box full of stuff, and there's one price. It's all this stuff. Just get it out of here. And
I'm not willing to do that sight unseen, though. I need to at least sift through it a little bit to make sure there's something in there that I want. You know, because it could be.
I don't just like grab the box and go.
I mean, if it's a box full, and I know it's all legitimate comic books, and they say, "Oh, give me $20 for the box," I'll do that without looking. But they say, "Oh, it's a box. I want $200." I need to at least look through it a little bit.
Well, I've never spent when I'm talking flea markets and garage sales like that, where I'm taking a box, I've never spent $200 for the box.
Yeah, well, I'm
it's more, look, I just want to get rid of this crap. Please give me a few bucks and take the box.
That's, yes.
Yeah, well, like I said, if it's a box full of comics and I spent $20 for it and it turns out it's all, it's all the Death of Superman issues thanks. That I already have, I deal with the fact that I wasted $20. But, I wouldn't want to spend any significant money without at least having an idea. And I have yet to come across that anyway, so it's not really a dilemma that I've had. But then there's, like I had said, Amazing Spider-Man, I designated 300 as the last one that I'm going for, or is the most recent one I'm going for, and I don't have issue 300. I have 299, I have 298. Actually, I don't even know if I have. I may not have 299 either.
Do you have the whole run up until that point?
No. I have. Where's my Amazing Spider-Man? I'm just looking on my app.
Do you have a
copy of from one? Yeah, I do, and it's signed by the cover artist. from issue 1 to 300, I have 276 of the issues.
Well, that's amazing.
So I'm missing 24 of them. The earliest one I have is number 11. So 1 through 10 is missing, and then a handful of others in the lower end. The only ones I have above number 46 are 265, 299, and 300 that I'm looking for. And then the other, 23 are all from between 1 and 46. But, the Spider-Man was Spider-Man was the series, when I first started collecting back in the early to mid-70s, that was the one I keyed in on that I wanted to get every issue of. So the fact that it's, 50 years later and I still don't have every issue is kind of sad. I was at...
If only you worked on those earlier ones back then.
That would have been the way to do it. That is the regret.
We all made that mistake.
Yeah, pretty much. I was at New York Comic Con, I'd say maybe 8 years ago, and they had Amazing Fantasy 15 slabbed, 4.5, I think it was, and they were asking around $4,000 for it. And I was like, I have $4,000 to spend on a comic. Now, that issue in that condition is probably going for upwards of $35,000, $40,000. So that would not have been a bad investment to make.
Would you have sold it, though?
And that I guess that's the dilemma you have with books is, when is the time to sell it? At what point does the price get to a spot where you say, I have to sell this? Although I could have just, if I had it, by now I would have, paying that $4,000 would be a distant memory now. And saying, well, I'm just going to keep this in my collection, and one day when I'm gone, that's, a good book for my kids to sell and get a nice nest egg for themselves. That wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world either. And then I had some guy offer me on, I think it was on Facebook. I can only think he heard of me through the show or whatever, and he said he had 2 issues of Amazing Fantasy number 15, and he was willing to sell the lesser quality copy of it, and he was looking for $15,000 for it, because he was trying to finance his upcoming wedding. So my response to him was, and this was a guy in Ireland, And realistically, I thought, well, how could I even possibly police a transaction like this where I know it's going to, you know, I know I'm not going to get screwed somehow. But I, you know, my response to him was, I would hate to finance your marriage at the cost of my own. So, so I did not take that that leap. But when I told Tina about it, in her defense, she was like, "Well, would you really want it?" Like, I think she was open to me making the argument as to why we should spend the $15,000 to get it. Which is insane that I have a wife that would do that for me, but you know, I believe yeah, I'm not complaining. What's that?
That's love, man.
Mine is nowhere near that supportive as I sit in a room filled with Superman stuff.
It's funny because, you know, she buys me like stuff that we have around the house, and then when she complains I have too much, I'm like, well, you keep buying it. What do you want me to do? She just gave me a set of Star Trek 2009 glasses for Father's Day.
Oh,
so it's true. Like, well, that's another thing I got to display in the house.
At least you only have really one hobby.
Well, it's one hobby. My hobby, I think, could be looked at as pop culture, because it's movies, it's music, it's comic books, it's television shows, it's books. You know, it's all of that. So my hobby is pop culture. Comics are the one collection.
When is it enough? When do you have enough?
Well, you know, when we got married, I had probably about 5,000 comics more than I have now. And that's when I decided to focus my collecting on, you know, like, you know, instead of just saying, oh, I'll get any Spider-Man issue I see, you know, 1 to 300. And I've probably spent more money on collecting since I pared it down than before, because now I'm not going into dollar bins and buying comics and satisfying my, you know, my need to buy new stuff. I'm buying the more expensive ones because I'm looking to complete the collections I have. So it actually has cost me money, but it saved me some space. And it gives me a collection that I think, you know, I think it has more cachet to it than it used to, because of, you know, the fact that these runs are getting filled in. You know, like I said, I need 3 issues of Daredevil to get everything I needed. I think Iron Man, I need like 5 issues to complete what I wanted for that series. Again, it's not the series to date. It's just from the beginning to whatever point. Captain America, I think I set my end point on issue 350, and I recently completed that. I have from 100 to 350. You know, so these things make me happy.
What made you select the end points you did?
It's kind of arbitrary, honestly, is I just decided, you know, with each series, I just decided, okay, this is where I'm. And I'm sure there's certain series, I don't even remember, but I'm sure there's certain series that I said, okay, I kind of have a solid run up until here, so I'm going to stop at this point. But, you know, again, it's kind of arbitrary. On X-Men, and I think I need 7 issues to complete what I wanted for that. But I was stopping at issue 200, and then all of a sudden I just changed my mind and I decided to go up to 300. And I filled in that gap really quickly. I think I only need 1 issue between 200 and 300 now, which is one I'm going to have a little trouble finding because it's the first appearance of Gambit. Not that that should be worth that much money, to be honest with you, but, you know, what are you going to do? Conan was a series that I wasn't doing at all. I had a handful of issues from the 80s that I had bought, and that was it. And then I totally blame Scott on this, because when we were at Tampa Bay Comic Con last year, he was like, oh, they have some good issues of Conan there, like really cheap. And I bought issues, I think, 3 and 4 for like $5 each. And that just lit a fire underneath me that I want issue 1 to 200. And I am down to, I think, 20 issues or so that I need to do that.
Wow.
So, what can I tell you? I'm obsessed.
But it's worse things to be obsessed about.
And most of what I end up getting is I do seek out the bargains. I am willing in most cases to do a low quality reader quality of book of certain series rather than spend top dollar to get a much higher rated issue. So, that's some of the early issues of Spider-Man that I've acquired in the last year or so have been, not totally beat up, but, a bit beat up. And, then I'm able to get an issue for $35, $40 that might, if in good condition, go for, a couple of hundred.
We got a lot of comic shops in my area, and one of them's a big shop called Comic Heaven, and they have dollar bins and just pretty and everything in between to sort through. But what I'm finding here is a lot of the shops that are opening up now have smaller footprints, especially one just opened up in the mall. It's a beautiful shop. I mean, I enjoy going in there, but they don't have the space for dollar bins. They've got bins, but it's, basically they're alphabetical bins. And I'm sure they've probably got more comics than what are out on the floor. But, again, it goes to they're probably, in a storage unit somewhere versus being on the floor there. Are you guys noticing that in, newer shops that are opening up? I mean, it's not a knock on the shops. Every shop I've been at, it's been the newer ones have been lovely shops. It's either running into two things. Either they don't have the footprint, or if they have the footprint, it's because of just how times have changed. The shop is much more diversified with gaming sections and things mm-hmm. like that, where there's just not the I enjoy going through their bins, but finding that they've got three or four of an issue and they happen to have them in different qualities where you can get the different price points, or they've got the big dollar bins to go through, which dollar bins are always my favorite to search through because it's the quest of knowing when you're going through that bin, you're going to find those gems that just happen to be in there that are worth grabbing. It's that book that you were looking for. Sometimes you get that one that's it's a really decent quality compared to, you mentioned the reader's copy. It's it's above a reader's copy, if that makes any sense. And that kind of stuff is fun. But I'm just finding more of the shops that I'm going to now don't have the footprint to be able to have those, at least to the same level that before. One or two boxes maybe, but not. I remember before it was a candy store. You'd go in and there'd be rows of them.
Yeah, and which is what I always look for. What I find a little frustrating now that I am trying to focus on some more prime issues is a lot of times when the stores have the issues I want, they have them slabbed. And once you slab them, they become artificially inflated on the price, which is why the store is doing it. I don't blame the owners for doing it, but I don't want slabbed issues and I don't want to pay slabbed issue prices. Now, I did start buying some... I'm trying to know what they call it, comic shell or something like that. It's like an openable slab. I bought them on Amazon, and they're not cheap. They're probably close to $20 a piece, which is still a lot cheaper than getting a book slabbed by CGS. But some of the more prime issues in my collection, I've decided to preserve them by putting them in those rather than just have them bagged and boarded. But again, I only have one slabbed issue, truly slabbed in my collection. And that was because I was trying to finish out the series of The Forever People. I don't remember the dollar amount that it was on it, but I needed issue number one. And when I searched for it on eBay, the only one I found the only one I found in my price range was a slabbed copy, which was cheaper than the raw copies. So I was like, well, I'll take it.
We can crack that thing open if you want to bring it open. Don't worry.
I left it in the slab. I got it because I wanted to complete that series, but I can read it in another format.
Well, what's the fun if you can't open it?
That's an argument I've made on many occasions, that I really don't want to have the books that I can't open them. Not that I necessarily will open them, but I always want to have the ability to open them. So that's where I like these reusable slabs. So I could, in theory, take it out of that and throw it into a reusable slab. But I haven't had the desire to do that as of yet. But I bought a copy of Spider-Man number 27 for $60, I think it was, and it's in decent shape. I already had Spider-Man 27. This is one of the very rare times that I bought one I already have. But the one I had actually has the front cover. It's got the Spider-Man logo cut off of it.
Oh, wow.
So it only has half a cover. And I think I bought that for like, you know, many years ago for like $3 or something like that. But since when I saw it in good shape at a reasonable price, I said, you know what, I'm going to replace that one. And I'm probably going to throw the half cover one on to eBay at some point and see what I can get for it.
Or you could cut out the rest of the pictures and glue them on your notebook.
That's always a thought. It's not a good thought, but it's a thought.
Well, I didn't say I had good thoughts.
Do you have books that you don't read, like you wouldn't read? I mean, it's we're in a, like such a different era now of our accessibility of being able to read things through digital and alternate methods and things like that. I mean, it's but for me, it was always growing up, it was the quest to read everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if I bought something that was a pricey comic, I was completing the collection so I could read the doggone story that was in there. Now, very carefully read the story, but I still wanted to read the story. I wanted to see the pictures. But has that changed for either of you at all? Now that like there's a different level of accessibility, like you will when you get those that prized issue or something like that. Do you still want to read it as badly as... I'm not saying that you don't want to read the story.
But do you want to read that actual issue, that copy of it?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I mean, do you read the story in a different method, or do you actually go to the issue now? What do you do?
I read it from a different method.
Yeah, for the most part, I read it from a different method. Now it's collecting to own as opposed to collecting to read. So it has changed, because it used to be, you know, you're 100% right. It used to be collecting to read. And it used to be, you know, this is one of the things that I lament the change in. It used to be that, you know, you'd read an issue that came out and they'd have the little asterisk and the box that would tell you, you know, oh, look back to issue 108 for when this happened in, you know, the previous story. And then it became a quest to find issue 108 so that you could read that story. And then little by little, you'd fill it in.
That's one of the things I feel with the new Superman. They're giving you stuff like that. Oh, check out whatever issue it was.
I like
it's throwback, right?
Yeah, but it's a good throwback as far as I'm concerned. I think sometimes they lose the ability to or the desire to do that because things have been reprinted in so many different formats that asterisk would be, you know, it would have to have a whole footnote about, you know, the different places where you could find that story.
Yeah, well, I mean, they give you whatever. See, issue 75, then it's up to you to find out where it was reprinted. I mean, if we only had some device we could look on that would tell us.
If only.
I used to like when Star Wars returned more recently, and for a time I was buying that, they used to give you the digital download code. I don't know if they still do that because I stopped buying it. But what I loved about that is I would put the book right in the box and then download it, read it on the iPad. I enjoy reading it on the iPad better than anything now because I can make the boxes bigger and read it without a problem.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that.
Speaking of Superman, actually, I don't want to forget to mention this. They're shooting it here. I live in Mentor, Ohio, and like literally 15 minutes from here is Mentor Headlands, and that's where they've taken over the beach right now, and they're shooting Superman, the new movie.
Oh, that's got to be interesting. I'd love to see that.
They haven't offered to make
you
an extra yet?
Take a look?
Yes. Yeah, my wife works at a memory care facility, and you know, we'll take the residents on a trip. And it was, now they've kind of closed off more of the beach, so it's not as accessible as it was before, just because I think they're getting much more into, you know, the shooting phase of everything. Mm-hmm. But very early on, she took them down there. It was like 2 weeks ago. And you were able to see quite a bit of the setup, you know, the, what they were doing. You didn't notice any story beats or anything, but it's kind of cool to see, like, this production going up, knowing the geeky part is it's not like you're seeing Superman running around in Menor Headland's beach right now. But it's just knowing that, like, Superman's being filmed there, it's pretty darn cool.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I have some experience seeing a few things being filmed, but my favorite story was over by the courthouse in downtown Brooklyn. They were filming a scene from the movie Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they were, you know, there was obviously a break in the filming. So Arnold Schwarzenegger standing, you know, in the there's cones and stuff to keep people out. And he's in the back, but you could see him, you know, that he's there. He's talking to some guy. And he's got an assistant with him, and he's sitting there, he's smoking a cigar, and people start calling, Arnold, Arnold, Arnold. And so he hands his cigar over to the assistant, he waves to the crowd, he comes back to the assistant, he takes the cigar, he's hanging out. 2 seconds later, Arnold, 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 he hands the cigar again. It's just, it happened like 6 times in a row. I just found it very amusing.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's... You know, over the years, there have been a lot of stuff that's been filmed in, you know, downtown Brooklyn and Manhattan. And, you know, one of my my other favorite stories is they were filming Law and Order in downtown Manhattan. And I was there. I was going into the courthouse in downtown Manhattan, and I was running late. So I'm going up the stairs, and there's this guy in front of me, and he's strolling along like he's got, you know, he's got all the time in the world. And I said, you know, with my nasty New Yorker attitude, I was like, excuse me. It turns out it was Michael Moriarty, and he just stepped right aside for me. He had no problem at all. But after when I realized it was him, I was kind of embarrassed.
Well, for me, one of the funniest things was there's a bridge from Staten Island to Bayonne, New Jersey, the Bayonne Bridge, and they raised up the road. It's an arched bridge, and in the last 10 years, they raised the road way up, so the freighters could fit under. And it's very distinctive looking when they were doing this project. When they Iron Fist was on Netflix, they did a lot of filming in Staten Island. And at this one point, they're going to China. And they show them there with the bridge in the background. And did they not go to China? That ain't China. That's Staten Island.
Yeah, that's close enough. They have some good Chinese restaurants there.
We do indeed.
And is anything that you're watching lately comic related? I'm trying to think. I don't think there's. I have watched The Boys, and I think there's a new season that started that I haven't seen. I haven't watched season 2 of Invincible yet, which season 1 I thought was very true to the comic and very enjoyable. Those are the two that are kind of on my to-watch list in the near future.
I'm watching that cartoon. My wife and I are watching that one. It's the Superman one that's on HBO Max.
Oh, My Adventures with Superman. Something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's... My wife likes it, too.
Is that an all ages? Or?
Yeah, but it's kind of like a modern, like, Superman take. But, like, it, again, like we were talking about earlier, as far as it's a modern take where they get all the things right, you know, the right beats and everything. It's fun. It's a fun Superman story. They're putting some lore into it. It's its own, like, little – it's kind of, think of it as, like, Ultimate Superman, probably better mm-hmm. than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and – but – It's really just enjoyable. It's typical half hour cartoon, and it cooks, and it's got an ongoing like story to it, and there's character progression and everything that you would expect in it, and it's been really enjoyable so far. I was happy to hear that it was picked up for season 2, and the only reason for the concern was the fact that, you know, with that the James Gunn DCU kind of going in there, what were they going to keep, what were they not going to keep moving forward with. And I'm glad that they gave that one a second season, because it's been a lot of fun so far. And there's a point to saying that, you know, being able to click on a cartoon and watch it for half an hour and just go, that was just a good time.
Did you watch X-Men 97?
I haven't watched 97 yet, so I'm making my way through right now the original run in order.
So, had you seen that already and you're rewatching, or are you watching this for the first time? All.
So when it first came out, I saw a lot of it, but I didn't see all of it. You know, it was one of those things where, because, you know, it was in an era where I didn't always record everything and stuff like that, you know, when it originally came out, I never saw the whole thing of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go through Disney Plus right now and finally, which is crazy because I love the X-Men. So the era when it came out, I just didn't see the whole thing. So now I'm enjoying making my way through all the arcs, and I want to make it up to 97. I'm one season away from hitting 97.
So when my son was small, I used him as an excuse to buy, you know, the bootleg DVDs at a Comic-Con of the X-Men series and the Spider-Man series, and you know he wants to watch it, which he ended up loving.
Yeah, we're all familiar with that one.
But, yeah. But you know, I mean, I bought them to get him into it because I wanted to watch them. You know, there's no getting around that. But I had seen, you know, all of the 90s Spider-Man and the 90s X-Men series many times because of him, which I have to thank him for that.
You know what, though, in all fairness, I think it works when you indoctrinate them at such a young age.
He has a definite appreciation for the characters and for the stories. He has his own apartment now. He doesn't live here anymore, but in his old room that he still hasn't taken his stuff out of, he's got two boxes of comics that I couldn't tell you the last time he went through them. You know, he was never a big comic collector. But he definitely has an appreciation for the characters.
For me, it was the Fleischer cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
For my daughters. Mm-hmm. Which is such, you know, it's such a zig compared to what I had in the 70s, where they got Tommy guns and they're shooting at things and stuff. And my kids, they both girls liked it. And they've stuck with the superhero stuff. They're not buying comic book stuff.
Yeah, well, we have had a double Pascarella appearance on the show.
Yeah. More than once.
You're mentioning the Fleischer cartoons, and we just did Killdozer and Is It Jaws, and they used some of the Fleischer special effects, you know, the camera effects and things like that in Killdozer. It was one of the things in the DVD extras. Those Fleischer cartoons, though, I just got the remastered of those recently and started rewatching them again just because, I don't know, I've owned them so many times now, you know, over the years. I just hadn't seen them in a while. And I got the remastered versions of them. I got to tell you, talk about a quality of something where you could release that today and you could make an argument. It is up there with anything that's been released today. They really nailed those.
Well, the Fleischer Studios animation of that era was... You know, it rivaled Disney.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we talked about that on a recent episode of Is It Yours that hasn't aired yet. And we are going to do a Fleischer cartoon in the not-too-distant future. Because, you know, the attention to detail they put into the animation, it almost makes, when you look at cartoons made in, like, the 60s and 70s, where you'd have that repeating background and things like that, it almost makes them embarrassing in comparison to what, you know, Disney and Fleischer did.
I guess you have to think about it. The Fleischer stuff was for the movies. You know, as opposed to... I think you had adults looking forward to going to see that.
It was, you know, that was a different era too. But, you know, I remember my dad and my uncle talking about how they'd go to the movies and, you know, they'd have 10 cents and... You know, you'd pay for the movie, they'd give you a comic book, you spent the day there, you're going to be able to get a thing of popcorn, you know.
It's air conditioned, you got a comic book.
I don't know if it was air conditioned.
I think it was air conditioned.
Well, I mean, you know, if we're talking narrow, when my dad would have been doing that, that would have been like the mid to late 40s. I don't know if it was air conditioned then.
Mine was born 33.
And mine was born 31.
My dad's older than, well, was older than Superman.
My dad insisted that he owned a copy of Action Comics number one and that his mother threw it out.
Ooh.
But I wonder if that's a Mandela effect memory. He would have been of age. I mean, you know, he was born in 31, so he would have been like 7 years old when it came out. So, could be.
Could also have wound up in a paper drive, too.
Damn them. And I,
damn
I've,
them and their war. You could have had Action Comics.
I've owned two homes in my life. You know, we, after I moved out of my apartment, we bought a house, and then we sold out, and we bought the one I live in now. And both times I had these dreams of moving in and then finding a box somewhere that had, like, all the Golden Age comics in it, you know, that was buried for years and years.
And I thought you were going to say you could have sold both houses and still couldn't buy Action Comics number one.
Well, that's probably true. I don't think I could buy Action Comics number one with the value of my house, my 401k, my retirement, everything. You put everything together, I still probably don't have Action Comics number one.
Well, who would have ever thought?
But then you think back to, you know, the 1970s when I was into comics and, you know, it was, oh, yeah, that Action Comics number one, it's crazy. It's going for, you know, $15,000, you know, whatever number it was. And then the one I always come back to is, you know, they had, you know, we were going to regularly to the hotel shows in Manhattan in the mid to late 70s. And they had dealers who would have, you know, original art Kirby pages for like $20 and $30 a piece. And my thought process was, why would I spend $30 on one page when I can go out and buy, you know, 70 comics for that money? Because I'm an idiot.
But even so, $15,000 in the 70s was a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, because a house in the 70s probably went for about $45,000. So, you know, we're talking, but you know what, in comparison, a house in the 70s that went for $45,000 would probably be about $500,000 now. So now you're talking about maybe $200,000 for that book that goes for well over $1 million. So still a bargain by that standard. But where are you getting the $15,000 in the 1970s to buy it? For that matter, where was I getting the $4,000 to buy Amazing Fantasy 15 8 years ago?
Oh, you could have taken a second mortgage on your house.
Yeah, I already had the second mortgage.
A HELOC.
But, you know.
Joe Erb didn't have it in stock when you went.
Joe Erb, and Sean, you probably not have no clue what we're talking about. Turns out, you know, Dave and I met, you know, we met through the show, actually, but we first met in person at New York Comic Con in 2010, maybe around there, 2011. Anyway, yeah. You know, talking about things, it turns out we both went to this comic store in the 1970s and 80s owned by this guy, Joe Erbs, in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and we both frequented that store. And, you know, we didn't know each other back then, but we could share memories of that store just the same. I had interesting talks with Jimmy Palmiotti and Dan, who's the DC... Dan DiDio. I had conversations with both of them that we frequented a comic store on Nostrand Avenue and another store over on Flatbush Avenue that we all went to, and probably sometimes around the same time. So that was kind of some cool conversations with that. But anyway, Joe Erb's store on 19th Avenue and 86th Street in Brooklyn was interesting because anytime I went in and I said, okay, you know, I have $5. I want the next issue. I was working my way down in Spider-Man. So, okay, you know, I'm down to number 75. I need issue 74. I get the $5 or $6 or whatever it was he charged for it at the time. And he would just reach into his case and he'd pull it out. So he had all these issues. And I have no idea, you know, how he organized them or how he knew what was what and what to charge. But, you know, whatever I asked him for, he'd somehow reach into something and he'd pull it out.
That's an old school comic shop owner, though, because that used to be the way that it was. I remember going to a place called Comics and Collectibles, and the guy that owned it was a mailman. It was a full-time mailman. was all good. But he was there, and he had a friend of his that was running the shop when he wasn't there. And those guys knew where everything was. It was just different. You could ask for something that you didn't see on the floor, and they had it. Or if they didn't have it, somehow, by some strange miracle, they knew where to get it. Like, you come back, like, the next week, and they ended up having it. Like, mm-hmm. which is just kind of this where this magical stuff happened. I don't know. Because when I was going for my Uncanny X-Men run back then, it was I started Uncanny X-Men after Dark Phoenix Saga. And I fell in love. I'm like, I'd previously been just, you know, I've been reading a lot of DCs. My Marvel stuff was Spider-Man. I've always loved Spidey since I was a little kid. Grabbed an issue of Uncanny X-Men. I'm like, oh, these characters are really cool. Like, during the Claremont era. So I wanted to go back. And it was shortly after Dark Phoenix, like just a couple months afterwards. So trying to go back and find that, like everything from the Phoenix Saga and all of that in there was a quest and a half. And I would ask for issues, and they had a lot that were there, you know, usually pretty close to a complete run. They were pricey even then. And I remember there was an, at least two issues that he didn't have there and somehow magically came up. Now, it could be that they magically came up from his basement. You know, they just weren't there in the, you know, as we were talking earlier, maybe he's got them at home. But it was certainly in that era, it was just a very, very different time of them being able to produce just issues and things. They knew where everything was at. I loved shops back in that day.
This guy really wasn't a comic shop. Really,
he was a bookstore.
Like, it was a bookstore.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Was it called Discount Books and Comics or something?
I think
like
on the sign in front of the store, I think it just said books. I don't think it had anything else. See, you know, you mentioned the X-Men stuff. I got in on the X-Men, at least with the new X-Men, I got in on the ground floor. Because when I first started buying, they were somewhere in the 80s. In the reprint run in between the original run and the new X-Men. So when they came out with the new X-Men, you know, I bought Giant Size X-Men number one off the newsstand. You know, I still own it. I read it probably 24 times, so it's got a little bit of wear and tear to it, but I still own that issue. My run of X-Men, I just looked it up on my app. You know, I'm doing issue 1 to 300. I only am missing 10 issues. But of those 10 issues, the toughest ones I have to get are issues 1 through 4. So I don't know if I will ever acquire those. But after that, I need 1 through 4, then I need 57, 60, then I have 3 of the reprint issues I need, so those I'll definitely find somewhere. And then 266, which is the first appearance of Gambit. That's it. So that's a pretty solid run as far as I'm concerned.
That's impressive.
Yeah, all I'm doing, I guess I'm inviting anybody who listens to the show to come in to break into my house and steal my comics. Or hopefully not.
or leave you an X-Men 1 or 4 with some cookies or something.
Yeah. Well, I did my issues number 10 and 11, or 11 and 12, excuse me, of Amazing Spider-Man were sent to me by a listener said, I have these two issues. They are beat to hell, but if you'd like them, I'll send them to you. And he did.
That's cool.
So, you know, that's sometimes, you know, the generosity of others is a great thing. And, you know, it seems to me because they were so beat up, they didn't have the value for him. But I hope he gets satisfaction knowing that they have the value for me.
He paid it forward.
Anything that fills in the gap is priceless.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, absolutely. Anything that you guys are specifically targeting in the comic stores?
Not me. I'm really not targeting it. If I can find some of those old back issues of Superman from 1960. In Action Comics, I'm in the 67 range, but I'm not proactively looking. It's just too expensive.
Yeah.
I end up, nostalgia winds up being my thing now. Strangely enough, when I go into the shops, because I'm surprised actually. Like sometimes I'll come across an issue that like has, because like you, Paul, I paired back, you know, through two moves between two different houses. I didn't get rid of all of my collection. It was just kind of let me consolidate and head down certain pieces. But what I didn't expect is that when I go to the bins, there's a certain issue that I like, oh, I remember that story. I remember really liking it. And so I'll grab it to have it. And it'll be something that I ultimately have in like an omnibus, or I have it digitally already or something like that. And yet it's having that issue. There's something to just having it in the collection. So I've got like, I've got those drawer boxes, mm-hmm. and I've got this one drawer that just makes no sense. It does to me, you know, they're all like, there's a person, like every issue I can go through, like it's, there's some kind of like trigger or connection, or I remember the story and there's a, you know, personal piece of that. But you, for, it's like every other drawer you can kind of go through, okay, there's a logic to this. It may not be the way you'd organize it, but you get like kind of what I was going for there. That, it's just a mishmash of like just stuff. And every issue I could pull out and tell you why I bought it, you know, like why I reacquired it. But it does not have any rhyme or reason to it. And the younger me would be screaming at me right now. But me now is strangely comfortable with it, which I don't know if that's growth or signs of insanity, but it's one of those things.
You know what? It really, what it comes down to is it's all what's fun for us. You know, I think, and I would suspect that our respective wives would all agree. I know my wife says sometimes this. I don't have a hobby that's so expensive that it's putting us in trouble financially in any way. In fact, it's cheaper than my going out with friends and going to bars and playing poker and doing all the things that I could be doing with our money. So I think she's pretty indulgent of it for that reason. And I think she understands, really the ultimate bottom line is she knows how much I enjoy doing this, and she gets pleasure out of that. And I suspect that Kathy and Mariah both feel the same way about you guys. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it is, there is a certain maturity to at least how our wives view our immaturity. So I think that's, you know, that's one of the big positives of collecting and, you know, at the advanced ages we are at.
The fact that we can say that, we're all lucky, gentlemen.
Yeah. And I told the guys the story, not this year, but a couple of years back, we had gone to Connecticut. We went up to, you know, Mohegan's son for a weekend. And while we were there, we went over to Mystic, Connecticut to have lunch. And on the way back, I saw there was a comic book store, and I said, oh, you know, I'm going to stop here and look in. And she was fine, you know, yeah, okay, go ahead. And then when I got back out to the car a couple of minutes later, she said, yeah, I just looked on my phone, and there's another comic store like 5 miles away that you may want to go to, and there's another place over here. And I remember I texted Dave and, Scott and Bill at the time, and Scott was like, marry her, because it was before we had gotten married. So I have to appreciate what I have. Anyway, I think unless you guys have any other thoughts, I think I'm going to call a close to it there.
Sounds good.
Unfortunately, Scott did not make it on. I suspect that he took his computer and smashed it on the floor. But one of the plans we had for today's show was he's got the MCU version of Trivial Pursuit. So I told him, bring it out and ask us some questions and see how we do. We are planning at some point in the not too distant future, maybe to do a online Trivial Pursuit game that we'll record and put in, you know, post it. So, if you like such things, that'll be something to look forward to. In the meanwhile, thanks Dave for coming on as always. And thanks Sean. Why don't you take a minute just to tell everybody about Raging Bullets and what you've been doing lately?
Yeah, so Raging Bullets, we've been around for over 18 years now, actually, which that time flies. We were a DC podcast for most of those 18 years. And actually, for the last 10 episodes, we started what we called season two, which basically the only difference between what we did before was now, instead of just being DC, we've opened it up to everything. We do a rotation. We didn't abandon DC. I love DC still. What we're doing now is kind of going back to our roots of doing deep dives into story arcs. I'm really enjoying it. We're doing old stuff. We're doing new stuff. We're kind of hopping around. DC, Marvel, Independence, and just doing a regular rotation of classic arcs and new arcs. We've done Kraven's Last Hunt. We've done the Dark Phoenix saga. We did Death in the Family from the Batman story arc. We're currently doing Thor. We're doing the original issues of Thor with Beta Ray Bill. We're doing a two-parter with that. And we did the current Flash series, the first six issues of that series. Just having a blast. It just kind of strangely just reinvigorated me. And I'm just really enjoying just exploring everything old, new, and in between. So it's been a fun time.
It's been a fun listen. Sean and his partner on that show, Jim Seguin, do a great job with it. And they do, sometimes we do the more peripheral dives. They do the deep dive on everything. There's no stone left unturned, is my experience usually, which I enjoy very much. So I of course, recommend that to anybody who's listening. And in the meanwhile, again, thanks for coming on, guys. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't stop listening to this to listen to Raging Bullets, but add that onto your list as well. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
This is fun.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.